Poets creating songs and stories inspired by the old American folk song, Big Rock Candy Mountain. That's the Steam Radio Syndicate broadcasting live on Monday, September 8th from 7 to 8 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
I'd like to be a gallery, put you all inside my show. Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream, and him on my whoa.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Brian Rogers. He's the new executive director of the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust. Welcome to KBOO, Brian.
Thank you, Joseph. It's good to be here.
So, Brian, you just got started in your job, and as director of the state's leading body that's concerned with the arts in Oregon, what kind of changes do you want to see?
Well, it's a very exciting time for both the trust and the commission, because we are about to engage in simultaneous long-range strategic planning processes. And the change is really about listening to the community, the people we serve, constituents, and understanding how arts and culture play a role in their lives, and how we might be able to better serve them, especially with both the agencies, commission and trust, to figure out ways to develop a mission and a plan that provides a greater level of service to both the constituents that directly provide arts and cultural programming to Oregonians, and how we can begin to play a role in, you know, change with the agency to explore things like economic growth, job retention and creation. Tourism is also a big part of what we will probably uncover as we begin town meetings across the state.
Mm-hmm. If somebody knows nothing about the Oregon Arts Commission, you know, they've just heard of it today. Does it deal directly with artists? Does it encourage art? Or is it connected with the education system? Or is it about giving grants or promoting tourism, you know, trying to get attention for the state? What does it do?
Yes, to all of those. We work directly with artists. We have a fellowship program that enables artists to apply. It's very competitive, but it recognizes artists of high artistic quality. We also have a public art program that works with new construction or renovation to state-owned buildings, that we have artists create public art as part of the Percent for Art program.
So like that lead pencil thing at the state hospital, right? The memorial to the...
The canisters, yes, at the state hospital.
The memorial to the inmates who died and were never buried, and their ashes are in a room.
Yes, absolutely. That's one of our big projects that we did, recently completed. In education, we have a arts and education program, and we work with artists to go into schools, teaching artists to go into schools and integrate the arts into the curriculum. Mm-hmm. We also work with organizations across the state to fund them to do that kind of activity on a local level. And we make a lot of grants across the state to all different kinds of organizations to enable them to provide services to Oregonians. It's really what it's all about, is making sure that the quality of life and communities all across the state is addressed. And the way we do that is working in partnership with arts and cultural organizations.
Mm-hmm. So if you run, like, if it's a big company like Oregon Ballet Theater, they might get some money. Or if it's a single person working in a studio, they might get a grant.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have review criteria, and, we keep a very rigorous process in place with peer review panels, and, we really look at quality and how people are reaching into the community and how well the organization is managed. So we serve on a lot of different levels.
So you just started in July and you came from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. What have you seen in Oregon so far? What kind of art has caught your eye?
Well, it's amazing. There's a lot of wonderful arts organizations that I'm just now getting exposed to, as you can imagine. It's been a whirlwind, but the organizations are amazing. The people who run them are genuinely dedicated to what they do and very enthusiastic about how the arts are integrated here in the community. Mm-hmm. And people I've met outside of that arena are also very aware of what's available to them and are all about participating in different kinds of ways, either as an audience member or taking classes at the local arts center or whatever the case may be, or volunteering.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a active environment for the arts and culture.
You said you're going on a tour. Is that right? You said you're going on a tour. State. Is that right?
Exactly. We have a number of coalition meetings, and there are a number of coalitions each county, and seven of the tribes receive funding and support from us.
Mm-hmm.
And we've set up a series of meetings with each of those this fall, starting in September. And I'll be going to as many of those as possible to, learn from each community what their thoughts are, what their concerns are, and probably more importantly, what opportunities are available to them that we may help them obtain.
Mm-hmm. So as you arrived, presumably you were sort of given a list of things to go see to start you off. Like what's on that list? Are you going to galleries and museums or?
Yeah, I mean,
dance.
It's we're developing that list now. You know, there's a lot of organizational things that we're working on, but certainly this fall we'll have the list organized, and I have probably over 300 business cards that were handed to me already that I'm real excited about getting out to meet as many folks as possible that run arts and cultural organizations.
Mm-hmm. How do they see your organization? What do they want out of it? Do they want sort of guidance or just cash?
Well, yeah. I mean, funding is always an important thing. And, we talk about what folks do with the money. And we collect a lot of information and data from the organizations that we work with. So we're able to take that and sit down with people from travel and tourism or business Oregon, mm-hmm. And talk about how arts and culture play a role in that, that it is a business, mm-hmm. sector, if you will.
Yeah.
And, it's important to be visible and cooperative as much as we can.
When you were in Pennsylvania, you were at the Pennsylvania Council for the Arts for 20 years. So it's kind of the same thing. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
And one of the things you were involved in was the Cultural Data Project. Yeah. So what is that?
It's an interesting project. I worked on that from the very beginning, and it was a project with the Pew Charitable Trust, the William Penn Foundation, the Heinz Endowment from Pittsburgh, and the Pittsburgh Foundation. And we all got together and basically said, each of us is asking for fiscal and statistical data from all the organizations that we fund. And there's a degree of overlap.
So you were getting into this before the era of big data?
Yes, I was. And,
okay.
Yeah, I actually started back in 1995 with Carnegie Mellon University and developed an e-grant, one of the first e-grants.
What's an e-grant?
It's, applicants can fill out the application form online.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Carnegie Mellon's, right, one of the greatest computer science places on earth.
So. Yeah, they have a building that was built by Apple and one just by Microsoft, and they're right across. It's a great, great school, yeah.
So was the idea to show people what happened to the money or how it what effect it had, or what was the data?
Well, it's interesting to standardize data collection. We're able to use that. An applicant can put the data in once and apply it to many funders using a PDF document. And funders can look at that information and make decisions on funding. And we also collected a lot of statistical information, like number of people who attended in different categories, like youth, seniors, etc., and number of performances. And we were able to take that information and give it to researchers who analyzed it and, you know, built cases for the arts. And you could do that by city, by region, by state. Right now, the Cultural Data Project is in 13 states with over 17,000 arts and cultural organizations inputting data. So the amount of the ability to report and use that data for stakeholders is pretty amazing. In the service to grant makers, there's 255 or so grant makers involved in CDB. Well, right,
what's
now
a grant maker? Somebody gives the money?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, like the Miller Foundation here or the Ford Family Foundation. You know, they're a grant maker.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of picture of the arts emerged from all that data that surprised anyone?
Well, you know, one of the big things that happened in Michigan, for example, the Michigan Arts Council was zeroed out in part of the legislative session. And they were able to use a lot of that data from the Cultural Data Project to discuss how arts and culture is a sector, and it has people employed, and they do pay taxes, and the citizens engage in a lot of arts and cultural activities, and we're able to use that to change the minds of the legislature.
What, to tell them that arts was important?
Yes, it's important, and that it is part of the economic fabric, if you will, of the state.
Mm-hmm. In what way is it part of the economic fabric?
Well, that, you know, thousands of people are employed in the arts.
Right.
They're paying taxes. And, you know, when somebody attends an arts and cultural event, you know, they're paying for a babysitter. They're, you know, buying gas. They're paying for parking. They're going out for dinner. And, you know, the economic impact in a community is substantial.
Mm-hmm.
It also helps with tourism. You know, when, for example, a small example is when conferences are hosted in a city, the decision makers for going to a city for that conference are often looking at what else is available. Is there, you know, a cultural district, for example, that people who attend the conference can go to?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all often weighs heavy on the decision to go to a certain city. So it's important to be able to you know, play that role. Whenever you open up a travel magazine, officially from the state or from wherever, there's always a section about the cultural organizations.
Mm-hmm.
and what they do, and you know, from the Children's Museum to the opera to whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm. So this sort of battle that's always going on, you know, trying to justify the arts, trying to assert that they have an effect on people. On the one hand, it's sort of about economics. You know, you can at least point to the amount of parking that people consume. But there's always the sort of nebulous subjective side that it makes people better people. Do you ever even address that?
It's interesting. Part of the other side of that, talking about it, is the stories that are told. For example, the other night I was at a reception at Center Stage for a program called Work for Art, which is run by the Regional Arts Council here in Portland. And at the end, the two MCs had a moment to speak about who they were. And I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, but the young gentleman who was one of the MCs told this funny story where he was a young man in high school, and the principal told him he could either go to detention or go to the musical. And he chose the musical. And he talked about how that, you know, changed his life in a way, that he's now an actor and a, you know, performer. You know, that moment of where he sort of became involved in the arts really helped him decide a path for his life in a way. And he was kind of really passionate about it and lively as well. So it's you know, the arts do, you know, impact people's lives in a lot of different ways. You know, when you go to a museum, you know, you learn about the context of the artwork that you're looking at, you know, the humanities, the heritage, the history of when, you know, a certain painting was created and what it was in reaction to. Was it political? Was it, you know, environmental, whatever the case may be. And maybe you're having a long day and you go to the theater and you sort of sit down and start to enjoy the play, and, you know, the problems that you had during the day sort of drift away, and you know, become engaged in what you're watching, and you know, it does affect people.
You can collect those stories in a way, but you can't quantify any of that stuff with your data project.
No, that's a difficult thing to do, is to quantify that kind of thing. But the two big growth industries in any state government's budget are corrections and healthcare and welfare. Right?
Corrections.
Prisons.
Yeah.
So, you know, the question that we have to think about is how arts and culture play a role in helping people make those kinds of decisions about their lives. And, you know, are we working in areas with adjudicated youth? Are we going into hospitals and using programming to engage people in the hospitals? Somebody just told me a great story. They're from an organization here that goes into nursing homes and works with people with dementia. And they have a program where they play big band music. And the nurses are very excited because it gives these people a way to remember things that happened when they first heard some of the, you know, some of that music.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of transforms them, even if for a short period of time, it's impactful.
So you're also head of the Oregon Cultural Trust, which, if I remember, is a pot of money for what is it? I remember it popped up about 10 years ago.
That's right. Yeah, about that time ago. And it's a trust that is around $22 million that we work with the citizens to encourage them to donate money to an arts and cultural organization.
Right, you can get a license plate and some of the money goes to them.
Right, exactly. And the trust puts about 50% of that money back into the principal and the balance each year. Mm-hmm. And the balance of that is used to grant across the state. And we work very closely with our partners. And the partners are the Oregon Humanities Council, Heritage, and the History Organization. So each of those partners is represented in the funding as well.
Right.
So it does help raise a great deal of awareness about the arts.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week is Brian Rogers. He's the executive director of the Oregon Arts Commission and of the Oregon Cultural Trust. You also started something in Pennsylvania called Picture Pennsylvania. What was that?
Well, it was a traveling exhibition program. Many of the regional art museums and nonprofit galleries were creating very similar types of exhibits. And what I did is I pulled together curators and museum directors, and we talked about what kind of exhibitions we were planning for the future. And we're able to, you know, agree to travel some of those around between the participating venues. So it was about economy of scale. Instead of curating, you know, 9 shows a year, they would curate 8 and be able to travel in a show. And they also were able to jointly curate shows, like Pennsylvania Artists 1900 to 1950, and then another show 1950 to current. and we're able to travel those as well. So it's pretty exciting to be able to bring together the visual arts community.
Brian, you brought in a bit of music that you listen to when you're working. What is it?
Well, I brought in a little Clash, Pressure Drop. It's one of my favorite Clash songs. It's great to work to, I think.
Let's give it a little listen.
Great.
That was the Clash singing Pressure Drop. So, Brian, what do you like about that?
Well, it takes me back to a time in, you know, the mid-1970s when...
How old are you?
How old am I? 48. Yeah, 48.
Right. I'm 49, so I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and being from the UK and all, right? Well, yeah, I just remember walking in the house one day. My older brother had the stereo on. And, you know, the record on was The Clash, London Calling. And I remember thinking, wow, what a sound. This is, like, amazing. So I immediately got hooked on not only The Clash, but that whole, you know, genre.
So you were, like, 13 or something.
Yeah, about that, yeah.
What's that brother doing now?
Well, he's still in Harrisburg. He's actually a writer, and he's, you know, just working in Harrisburg.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Punk's not dead?
Punk's never dead, right?
Well, do you think it's significant that people who are into that music are now in positions of power, relative power? They're in bureaucracies and they're... What does it mean?
Yeah, what's this bureaucrat doing listening to The Clash?
Well, you're a Clash fan first.
Right, so. Exactly. Then the bureaucrat, yeah. It means that, you know, I guess we all grow up sometime, but still enjoy that kind of music.
Brian, you're also an artist, a painter. You did your degree at Temple University and a master's at the University of Arizona. What kind of stuff do you paint?
Well, it's a lot about interactions with people and communications and feelings. It's sort of, I worked very closely with some artists that were very much like in the abstract expressionist school that, you know, were... of course older than me, but it does have a sort of gestalt, if you will. And you know, I work in oil paint, and there's a lot of layers, and it's you know, pretty intense. And I use a lot of mythology too in the work to express sort of how those themes from mythology are still relevant today.
Or like classical mythology?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Greeks and Romans,
yeah.
Is it some of it figurative? Can you see recognizable shapes?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I might do a series of work about the Odyssey.
Have you always been doing that? Like since college?
Yeah, I have. I have ever since college. And it takes sort of a while to, you know, there's a lot of people who say, artists, let's say, you know, it takes a number of years to mature, you know, the kind of thought and the craft of the medium, whatever that medium may be.
So, like in an ideal world, do you have your own studio? Was there a room in the house?
Room in the house, yeah.
And is it a kind of thing you do to relax, or you get up really early on a Saturday, do it? How does it work?
Usually at night, on the over like a Friday night, Saturday night. Sunday night kind of thing. Yeah.
So you need quiet.
Yeah, a little time to concentrate and listen to The Clash and do some painting.
Oh, you listen to music when you're painting or
that is work too, right?
Crunching spreadsheets.
It's yeah.
Both?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So the you know, Business Oregon is now sort of in charge of your group, the Arts Commission, and their big thing is, you know, creating jobs and stimulating tourism and promoting the brand of Oregon around the world. Mm-hmm. And so art is now officially part of that. So where do you fit in with that, your organization?
Well, I mean, it's great to be with Business Oregon. The amount of not only the infrastructure and support that they give us is pretty tremendous, but the direction that they're heading in is really visionary and vibrant. Sean Robbins is the new director. And mm-hmm.
He's been there since June the 1st.
Yeah, June 1st. So he's been going out with his staff on a tour, doing two town meetings a week, and really, you know, understanding each of the region's thoughts and concerns, and with an eye towards business development and growth, you know, mm-hmm. Thinking about how businesses can grow from, you know, X amount of people to Y amount of people, like adding 50, 100 people.
Right, right. Yeah. So, because it's easier to add jobs than to import jobs, you know, bring in a new company.
I think it's, you know, obviously cheaper for organizations mm-hmm. or businesses that are here to grow than to entice new businesses to come.
Mm-hmm.
That's also on the agenda as well.
Right. But the arts, I mean, is the arts could just be window dressing and all that, or what is the...
Well, it could be considered that, but I'm thinking more about how it does play a role in the economic situation of communities that, you know, there are jobs mm-hmm. in the arts and culture that, you know, they do pay taxes and they play an important role in how you know, businesses are attracted to a community, that there are things for employees to do and be engaged in on a lot of different levels.
Mm-hmm. I could see where somewhere like Ashland is dependent on art, or Joseph Oregon, you know, there's foundries and artists out there. Is the idea to, when people think of Oregon, would you like them to think of art, you know, up there with the outdoors?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a primary goal that I'm sure is going to emerge from the planning processes
mm-hmm.
that, you know, to create a higher level of awareness and visibility for the arts and culture in Oregon is an extremely important thing for us to do mm-hmm. and to be conscious of as a state.
So when people, like, you know, on the East Coast open up a travel magazine, what would you like them to see?
Well, I've been reading all the travel magazines, and there already is a presence, a strong presence of a lot of arts organizations. But, you know, I think if we're able to make that presence even stronger and more visible, not only to the people on the East Coast, but international travelers, that would be, you know, extremely important.
I'm Joseph Galvin. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guest this week was Brian Rogers, the Executive Director of the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust. Thanks so much for coming in, Brian.
Thank you very much, Joseph. I really appreciate it.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Enemigo Imperialismo, Enemy Imperialism, a bilingual community art exhibit that explores the dimensions of imperialism in the world today. The opening of this art show will be Friday, September 5th at 6 p.m. at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, 1001 Southeast Division Street in Portland. Artists around the world have responded to violence with work that questions the legitimacy of the state and empire. Enemigo Imperialismo points to one of our common targets in the fight for global justice and invites us to reflect on power, resistance, and self-determination. Again, that's Enemigo Imperialismo. The opening of this art show will be Friday, September 5th at 6 p.m. at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, 1001 Southeast Division Street in Portland. The show will be up until September 25th. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Enemigo Imperialismo, Enemy Imperialism, a bilingual community art exhibit that explores the dimensions of imperialism in the world today. The opening of this art show will be Friday, September 5th at 6 p.m. at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, 1001 Southeast Division Street in Portland. Artists around the world have responded to violence with work that questions the legitimacy of the state and empire. Enemigo Imperialismo points to one of our common targets in the fight for global justice and invites us to reflect on power, resistance, and self-determination. Again, that's Enemigo Imperialismo. The opening of this art show will be Friday, September 5th at 6 p.m. at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, 1001 Southeast Division Street in Portland. The show will be up until September 25th. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Two Rivers, One City, Tuesday, September 9th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Charles Jordan Community Center in Portland. The Willamette and the Columbia Rivers provide sustenance, recreation, and economic benefits to our region. Yet these rivers are burdened with the legacy of industrial pollution and threatened with the future of toxic contamination. The Two Rivers, One City event will bring a broad network of river users together to share their stake in clean water. The event will include an overview of the various environmental justice issues related to the Portland Harbor Superfund cleanup and the oil by rail projects along the Columbia. Again, that's Two Rivers, One City, Tuesday, September 9th at the Charles Jordan Community Center, 9009 North Foss Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, the KBU News at Noon for September 2nd, 2014. Protesters shut down the I-5 freeway at the Rose Quarter in Portland on Monday.